Shut up!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a friend.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Ah, we stink, man.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
Well, another week and another win. This is getting easy, Brock. This is easy. You just show up, you win games, you leave. What's the problem? You show up and win. How nice
dominate.
Is this?
I mean, you dominate.
I don't have to say you dominate. I didn't say that. I mean, there's no reason to get carried away with the whole thing. You just show up, you win games, you go back to the bus, and you go home.
Sure.
What's the problem? 5-0.
And you do it for the first time in franchise history.
So it's never been 5-0.
Nope.
And then 4-0.
Yep.
They've never been 5-0. They're 5-0. They just win games. That's fine. Like, whatever comes your way, you just find a way to win. Just find a way to win. Is that who they are? Is that going to be the mark of this team?
Pete just wants his respect.
Poor Pete. I feel bad for Pete. I really do. I know we talked about it. Was it last week, 2 weeks ago? I just feel bad for him. I know he's 5-0, and if I told him I felt bad for him, he'd get mad at me, right?
Oh, real mad.
Oh, yeah. Super mad.
No, that's not it, Mike. Mike, that's not it.
No, that's not it, Mike.
You're silver spoon feeling bad for me. Like, no, don't do that.
But I feel bad. This has to be breaking him up inside. This is not Pete Carroll football. Pete's miserable on the sideline, chewing that gum in anger, watching people just slice through his defense. Like, and yes, and last week, they were just running through his deal, which Pete has to, that kills him.
And his team's not getting flagged. That probably drives him nuts.
They usually, I mean, they did call a defensive timeout because of mass confusion in the fourth quarter. So don't worry. They still do some dumb stuff, but not much.
No.
This has to be killing him, man. he's got to be, he goes home. He's just furious.
Glenna, you wouldn't believe this. Our defense stinks and we won again.
He's just so mad.
Are you at the point where you feel like the Seahawks are good because of nothing that Pete Carroll is doing?
Yes.
Wow.
Whoa.
The Seahawks are good, and it has nothing to do with the things that Pete Carroll is good at.
I might be. I might be there. He doesn't say, this is not Pete Carroll.
Put some respect on that man and take that back. Did you see him in the locker room post-game?
I saw that.
Did he sound any different than he did 5 years ago when Bruce was yelling, hell no?
Yeah, he sounded, there was like a tinge of depression.
Please.
It was like, it was like then, except with an undercurrent of depression.
Howdy, I think you may need to go pull some of those sounds, you know, from 5 years. He had his go vote on shoes. He was rocking.
I know.
He was pumped. He was fist pumping. There was not one shred of difference, Salky, when it comes to finding ways to win.
But
that's always been the outward appearance,
though, Brock. When he goes home, look out. I mean, that's... No one really knows the truth, man.
Can you win the game in the first quarter?
No!
Can you win the game in the second quarter?
No!
Can you win the game in the third quarter?
No!
Can you win the game in the fourth quarter?
I sound just as excited, but Pete sounds depressed.
No, he does not. That sounds exactly the same as it did 5 years
ago. All right, guys, you know what we got to do. Gather around. Let's go through the motions here. Can you win the game? All right.
This has been a hard pill for you to swallow, Mike. This has been a really hard pill
for you to swallow. It's just bizarre to watch.
Because basically we came out at the beginning of the season. We had this long conversation about whether or not the Seahawks were going to evolve and change and adapt. And rightly so, based on precedence, you were hard line on the side that Pete Carroll will never change.
Right.
This is never going to look different than it ever has.
Right.
And we're set up for disaster because we're asking an old man to do new things. And yet,
I didn't say an old man, thanks, but okay.
A geriatric prince.
I didn't say that.
We're asking him to do something he's not going to be able to do. Old dog, new tricks.
I called him depressed, not old. Get it straight.
Did you say a geriatric prince?
You did, yeah.
Here we are.
Howdy said that, let's be clear.
Five games in, the Seahawks looking nothing like they ever have. The only thing that looks different, looks the same, is that they have high energy and that they win magical games at the end.
So what you're saying, Salk, is after that celebration, Emo Pete walks out to the car and Glenna drives him home?
Yep.
I walk these empty streets along the boulevard of broken dreams.
He goes home and just sort of that sad, like, yeah.
Got a Charlie Brown
song. Dog.
Do you remember Emo Pete?
Put on a televangelist facade for the rest of the day and try and keep everybody where they need to be.
Yes.
Just
deep, dark, dank, and depressed.
Walking back to his Kia Sorento, just slowly driving home, trying to look past every Dairy Queen to make sure he doesn't drown himself in blizzards.
Poor guy, man. This isn't his kind of game. Nope. This is not the way he wants teams
and
to
yet,
look.
Here we are, the Seahawks here we are 5-0.
So here's the question. Well, look, before we get into any questions, before we get into any, there's some hand-wringing to be done.
Oh, good.
A little bit.
Good, okay. Let's start this thing right.
What, the number one, yeah. of the number
five and
one
feels
seed?
Feels like 2-3.
The number one seed in the NFC, hand-wringing? I'm looking at the standings right now.
Later.
The number one, the only team with a bye, the 5-0 Seahawks, who have never been 5-0 even in 2013.
For everybody who's been on our text chain, which is essentially Howdy, Kyle, Brock, and me, who's the person
the
who's
same
doing
as
the
always?
Hand-wringing? It's Brock.
Brock
is the ultimate hand
always Brock.
What are you talking about?
Stop
I sent one text about cooking in the rain. That's it.
Brock.
What?
You are a hand-wringer.
What are you talking about?
Biggest hand wringer in the world. But none of that's important right now. We don't forget that. Stacy tried to make me wring hands on their show the other day.
Stacy,
I'm not
going
to do it. I'm not wringing
she
hands.
She set you up so good.
How dare you? Can't we just talk about how good Russell Wilson is for a few minutes? Forgetting about whether he's cooking or not. Take all that out. What Russell did at the end of the game on Sunday Night Football was sublime. It was MVP caliber. Leading that drive, and I think that's his 11th in the last 3 years, leading that drive for a touch, needing a touchdown, not a field goal, not a little field goal at the end of the, oh, I got to drive down 30, 40 yards and kick a field. No. Down a touchdown, needing six, taking his team all the way down the field, converting 2 fourth downs, including the one for the win, which I'm not even sure was as challenging as the 4th and 10 earlier in the drive, using his legs early, using his arm later, taking his team down the field when they needed him and scoring with only 15 seconds left so that even this defense couldn't blow it at the end. That is what MVPs do.
96 yards. On a day that he didn't,
this
frankly,
wasn't getting the ball at the 25-yard line. No. I'll take the ball at the 4.
96 yards. And on a day he did not have his best stuff. On a day in the wind, in the rain, in that environment, he missed, as far as this season goes. I mean, he's probably league average as far as his accuracy. His fastball that day did not cut through the wind. And, you know, he missed some throws that were uncharacteristic, even on that 96-yard drive. Right, and part of me wonders if he missed them intentionally to leave 15 seconds instead of 45 seconds, where Minnesota would have gone down and kicked the game-winning field goal. But no, he did not intentionally miss.
But it worked out better that way.
He did. He missed a few, and then all of a sudden on 4th and 10. And did I say to Haley? Did I turn to her on the couch and say, Haley, remember when you miss your first 3 threes? What do you got to do on the 4th one?
Hit it.
You got to shoot. No. Shooters shoot. And MVPs win one possession games when everything's on the line. On 4th and 10, you deliver. When your defense is arguably the worst in the league, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. When the wind and rain is howling, it doesn't matter. When you've missed earlier throws, it doesn't matter. When the game is on the line and you have missed some shots, you're going to step up to the line and you're going to shoot. And you're going to go hit the game winner. And DK Metcalf is going to go finish both of those 4th downs for you. And it was extraordinary. I was asked by some folks, like, is this your favorite? Is this your favorite game-winning drive? You know, how do you add context? How do you frame somebody that for 9 years has been the wizard in so many of these moments? I don't know how or if I can frame it. All I know is that one accomplished something even he and Pete have never done, and that's begun a season 5-0 that are squarely on the shoulders of number 3.
This is why quarterback wins have always mattered to me. Right? I know that there's a group of people out there who laughs at quarterback wins and look at Russell's team. Quarterback wins matter, man.
Well, they may come to your side this year. They didn't want to come to your side when he had a defense, when he had to score 24 points, you know, when he had to make 5 plays a game instead of 45 plays a game. They didn't really want to give you kind of the wins then. They wanted to look at, right, the defense and the batting lineup and everybody else that helped him and you know, just, you know, limited runs and everything else. So, you know, it was pretty easy.
But I don't know that was a Seattle Russell Wilson thing. I think it's just there's a group of people out there that don't believe in quarterback wins the same way they don't believe in pitcher wins. And I would separate the two out. I get why pitcher wins don't matter much. I still think they have some very small use, but I get that they're nowhere near as valuable as all of the new stats that you can look at in order to determine what kind of a pitcher you've got. But quarterback wins, I think, might be the single most important. This league, especially now, this league's built around them, man. And it's specifically built around them doing what Russell did at the end of the game. I mean, you watch Monday Night Football last night. Drew Brees takes his team down. Justin Herbert did it once, couldn't do it twice. Justin Herbert is good. By the way, he looks so much better than I ever thought he would.
Agreed.
That guy looked really good, and I'm a little surprised.
Agreed.
But Russell gets it done.
Yep.
And the only couple times we haven't seen him get it done, there's been like a fumble or like something goes awry. It's not that he just comes up short. It's like he never even gets the chance to get going. Remember we had those conversations of like, oh, I just feel robbed of seeing what Russell would get a chance to do if he had the ball one more time here in this game. Give him the ball in the clutch and he wins. Quarterback wins matter. And now the train has left the station here on the MVP thing. Because I'll admit, when I watching the game on Sunday night, I do the Sue Bird Open, all about, I mean, literally the Open is about Russ for MVP. Quite literally,
yes.
It's Russell the MVP Open.
And Doug Baldwin puked.
Oh.
He vomited in his mouth like Jay Buhner did signing Ichiro back.
I kind of did too. I was with Doug. I'll be honest.
Come on.
It just was a little over the top. Is that so? Have you ever seen that before? Have you ever seen an MVP case made in an open to a game in week five?
Not in week five. I bet at the end of last year, Lamar Jackson and some of the opens after his teammates, Mark Ingram and others.
Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
Week five?
No.
It seemed a little over the top. So no, I wasn't.
Maybe a little early.
I wasn't vomiting all over my house the way I'm sure Doug was in his. But I was a little surprised. But you know what? That's what MVPs do, man. That's what MVPs do.
Yep.
They
get sacked four times in the first half. They do nothing on offense. They trail to Minnesota. They get dominated in every phase of the game. And then they have a stretch in the third quarter where they capitalize on another team's success. And then when the game's on the line, you got to drive 96 yards in the wind and rain, which you haven't done all day long. You just find a way in the final 90 seconds to do it.
It's pretty remarkable. It really is.
It's pretty sick.
And I'll say this about Russ. I mean, look, he can do it all now. He's really just become essentially a near-perfect quarterback. It's really remarkable. But I will still always love the plays he makes with his legs. They're still my favorites. And there were two anyway, that stand out from that game. I mean, the little run that started the final drive, as you mentioned, he got the ball, inside his own 5-yard line, first play from scrimmage, right? He ends up running out for about 20, or almost just past the 20, like 15, 16 yards, something like that. You need that to kind of get that drive going, don't you?
Well, there's no question. You have to see the chains move the first time on any 2-minute drive in any of those game situations. They will all tell you the exact same thing. None of it starts until the engine gets going when you see the chains move the first time. So, and you get out of your goal line and out of your end zone and you provide a spark and a hope, no question.
There was the spinorama, right? Which we hadn't seen in a while. At least we haven't seen it work, but he did his little weird spinorama thing and then threw. That's always fun. And then my favorite, I mentioned this to Jake, he remembered it, maybe you will also, Brock, and maybe you could actually help me a little bit, sort of understand what happened on the play. You remember the play where it looked like sort of a bootleg of some sort out to the left, and Russ turned around from after the fake handoff, and there was somebody coming right at him from the left,
okay.
And he immediately broke off the bootleg, turned around, ran right, and hit Chris Carson for like an 8 or 9 yard gain.
Yes.
Do you remember that play?
Yes. Yes, and that's a challenge to play in Minnesota, and Harrison Smith and the other safety, and Zimmer's excellent, man. Zimmer's one of the fine like defensive coaches in this league to scheme and have free people running at you. And on that drive, the number of different times he had free runners at him, the touchdown pass, the 4th and 10, like free runners coming at him, and he just doesn't flinch. You know when you sit and talk to him at times, as we have over the years, and he just kind of has that stare? Right, he just doesn't blink, and he doesn't flinch. That's what he is, and it's this year in the face of, as we started the show, a team that's built unlike any other in his 8 years. Which, by the way, was not the plan. They were still built to be really supposed to be good on defense. They traded for the corner. They drafted the linebacker. They drafted the pass rusher. Yeah. They paid for Bruce Irvin. Their resources still went on that side of the ball. And so again, he simply doesn't flinch no matter what is going on in game, no matter what's going on around him. It's just pretty remarkable.
Well, I
gotta
tell you, I don't think I can't recall a play quite like that one. I know it's a really, like, it doesn't turn out to be a majorly important play in the game, but it just sort of struck me. I can't remember seeing anything quite like that play.
Well, it just speaks as well to when we talk about this, like his master's degree in complete control, right? I mean, where the game has slowed down initially in his career. If you go way back in the way back machine, he played a tick faster than everybody else. He ran a tick faster. He just scrambled. It was like the game that didn't necessarily slow down. He was just a tick faster than anything we had ever seen in Seattle. And really the league in many ways hadn't seen. Now it has, and Mahomes and Lamar and maybe even guys in Lamar that are even a tick faster than Russell ever was. But then the game, you know, like to slow down the game was not slowing down the game. It was just he could play it a beat faster. Now, the game is truly slowed down. I mean, it's slowed down to the point that, yes, even on a bootleg in a play action where he's got a total free runner coming at him, that's okay. Like the Matrix, that's all right. Like, I'll just kind of weave my way out of here. Is it that
he sees it faster?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
He's seeing it so quickly that he anticipates what's happening and knows what else he can do. I mean, I just thought the presence of mind to know he could even turn around and have Chris Carson on the backside was pretty incredible.
Yes.
So, Russell's playing at a level that I'm not sure we've seen. I mean, he's played great for essentially the entirety of his career here. I still can't get over the fact that he's never missed a game. I mean, they brought that, like, he started game one, he's never come out.
Yep.
Pretty.
Has he missed a practice?
Yeah, he must have missed not some practices many. after the MCL and high ankle sprain.
Not many.
I think he missed a few practices.
Not many.
All right, not many. But I'm sure he missed at least some, right? Right?
When he had a grapefruit, when they took the sock off and the shoe off and a grapefruit was sitting atop his ankle after that sprain or his MCL.
He's not a hero about those things, though. I mean, it's not like Roethlisberger. He's not a never big let everybody know about how hurt I am or anything.
No, he's like Peyton in that way. I mean, he did not want anybody to know.
He was legitimately hurt. The guy had a high ankle sprain.
He was waking up at 2 a.m. for physical therapy.
For them to milk the swelling out of his ankle.
Right. But this is not it's not like that has been his. I mean, Russell does have some things that can be a little, you know, off-putting for some. I don't think that's one of them at all. I think he's been just unbelievably tough. And that probably doesn't get talked that much about either. And probably
no, it doesn't. It should. Absolutely. I mean, I've told you before, that was the one thing about Peyton. Say what you want in big games or body language or any of that other stuff. He never wanted to talk about when his bursa sac, you know, blew up and his knee was swollen or his elbow was hurt or his body. He never, ever, ever missed a practice. He never wanted to talk about. And to him, it always kind of annoyed him, rightfully so, that Steve McNair is so tough. Mm-hmm. Oh, look at the ribs and oh, the toe injury. And oh, he's missing practice and he's playing and he's missing all this time, but he's out there just gutting it out and he's so tough.
Well, Favre was the same way. And then you got Roethlisberger. I mean, like, there's just a group of them that just have that, you know, sort of thing about that. It's interesting. You kind of think about maybe toughness or availability gets lost occasionally. But I was when I first heard that Alex Smith was going to be active this week behind Kyle Allen, I said, and I wish I had marked this somehow. I didn't. So you'll just have to believe me. And I was like, oh, he's definitely going to play in this game. If he's active for the first time, Kyle Allen, no way finishes that game. Like, he'll get hurt. Like,
did the Rams play a part of that, playing Aaron Donald and the Rams? Or
I mean, maybe. Didn't even know who it was.
Okay.
Didn't have any idea who they were playing. It was just like, oh, he's active, he's going to play. And sure enough, Kyle Allen ends up getting hurt in the game because that's what guys like Kyle Allen do. Why does that happen, Brock?
Because unlike Russell, that knows everything of everybody on the field and has an awareness of what's going on, inexperienced quarterbacks that have bounced around and been in different systems and frankly can never slow the game down. I'll raise my hand. Can never necessarily slow the game down. You just take shots. John Mobley may dislodge your kidney. You know, you may take a concussion from the corner blitz that you didn't see until the last second.
Yeah.
So yeah. Yeah. I think that's probably why it happens.
Pretty cool seeing Alex Smith. I think we might talk about him later, but good
it's
for that.
It's terrifying
guy.
Seeing Alex Smith. I was holding my breath on every snap.
Don't you like
when
it,
Aaron
like,
Donald jumped on his back?
Yeah. That his leg was going to snap like a twig.
Right off the bat. He had like a little running play though. Like he still looked athletic and all the things that made Alex Smith good for a couple of years. He still kind of looked like he could do them. That was great. I thought it was a really cool story. So, so we kind of run through the Russell thing. Any last thoughts on Russ? I want to talk about DK here for a second.
No, that's pretty. Are we going to talk about Emo Pete or we're going to?
We already did. No, we're done.
Oh,
we did. We're done.
Okay,
with
we buried that too.
Poor
okay,
Pete.
Good. Okay,
just moping around his house.
Do you think he does the sipping? Do you think he does the sipping rum that Howdy got us that one time? What do you think he goes home and he puts his feet up and before he watches the tape or maybe. before he begins watching the tape. What do you think? Is he a glass of wine?
I assume it's just like
grapefruit juice.
He finds some the Smiths
prune juice?
Or Morrissey, and he's just like he's moping around his house. Prune juice? That's not nice. That's
that old.
Come on, man.
He's old.
I'm sorry.
He's not even the oldest coach in the NFL.
That's right.
Anymore.
Romeo Crennel. No. Rack.
It's true.
Come on.
It's true. My bad. No, My bad. That's uncalled for.
It's sort of this like just moping around the house, right? Going from room to room, staring out in the rain. Right?
There is no chance. I don't know if he gets to see the grandkids in this COVID era or what he's doing. I bet he's seeing very few people. There is no chance. He was thrilled. Until he puts the game tape on.
I don't know. I think he
was.
Yeah, he likes
thrilled.
To win. Don't get me wrong. Yes. Of course he likes to win. But win like this? Like, this is just not. It's not the way Pete Carroll.
Okay, anyhow, my bad. I derailed. Get it back to DK.
All right, I had a question. Hold on. The Charlie Brown is. All right, that's enough. Poor Pete. Stop making fun of Pete. That's not nice. All right, here's my DK question for you. All right, first of all, his ceiling is really high. I want to talk about it in a moment, but. Is there any truth to the rumor that they've altered that can you win the game in the first quarter chant for DK? And it's now, can you catch the ball on first down? No. Can you catch the ball on second down? No.
Hell no.
Can you catch the ball on fourth down?
No.
Hey. That guy's T.O., man. I know that you will say that it's more Julio, but it's T.O. to me. Not in personality, obviously, but he's uncoverable. Freakish side speed combination. I know T.O. wasn't quite as fast, but he was just always open. But with mediocre hands, and it may just be what we've got to accept with DK Metcalf.
You thought he should have caught the second down or third down, the out route?
That was second down.
Second down. Yeah. Third down he was maybe interfered with, but regardless.
Yeah, I thought he should have caught second down.
Yeah.
It just seems like there's one or two balls a game where you're like, why did he catch that?
He dropped that?
Why did he drop that one?
What?
It just and that was sort of T.O., like one of the great receivers
I think
of all
that's
time.
Fair. Yes, and Julio, frankly, is the exact same way, too. Julio Jones is the exact same way. He dropped, you know, I've done a Falcons game and been around that. And, yeah, he has drops and drop. It's like, whoa, that's kind of inexplicable.
Why did he drop that
like,
one?
You're too good. Yeah,
I mean, maybe good for that. Maybe that just happens with everybody other than Larry Fitzgerald. And we start to hold guys to just a ridiculously high standard. I mean, Larry Fitzgerald never drops the ball. Yep. I think you would say Randy Moss. I can't ever remember him dropping the ball, even when it was contested with seven. I mean, Randy Moss is the best wide receiver I've ever seen. But short of a couple of guys, I think even a lot of the great wide receivers of all time do drop balls. And so maybe we just have to, you know, kind of expect that. And that's okay
and
because
Doug
of all the other
right?
crazy I mean, things he does.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked a lot about Doug and, you know, on the field, Steve Largent, Doug Baldwin, the Seahawks' best receivers
of
all time.
Yeah, those are different kinds of guys, though. I mean, like, I guess what I mean is sort of the And
the
I'm
big,
not. This isn't a shot.
The big number one
the big
outside.
Number one outside guys. If you are a slot guy or a possession receiver, or even someone like Doug who can kind of do it all at his size, there's not a shot at Doug. I mean, he's a remarkable player. Those guys can't drop balls.
Yes.
Because otherwise, they have not very much use. Like part of what makes the Tyler Lockett, even although you can obviously take the top off, like those guys have to catch everything. It's what makes them them. But if you're a DK Metcalf, if you're a T.O., if you're a Julio Jones, a Megatron, et cetera, there's so much value you bring that maybe you don't have to catch every single ball.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, maybe such a threat, right? Such a fear that you put into defenses, that old conversation we used to have all the time. What is a number one receiver? It's become less of a conversation in the league because of the amount of nickel and three wideouts and spraying the ball everywhere and everything else. But way back when, remember a decade ago, and I would always say to you, well, you can define a number one receiver because of, you know, how much commitment the defense makes, how much fear he puts and how much he dictates to what the defense has to do on the other side, right? You've got to account for him. You just can't leave that home run hitter, right? You can get away with that pitch to, you know, seven other guys in the lineup, but not to that guy because at any time he can catch it, break one tackle and be a house call. And DK has that kind of presence on the field. And I think you're right. I think when you look at many of those that in recent memory, you can go through the list, save for Larry. Yeah. Most of those guys were similar that did not have the most elite hands.
Yeah, it's not their top skill, right?
Correct.
Like there are other things they do better, but gosh, what he has brought to Russell Wilson is a whole new level. I mean, like he's never really had the option. This is not a shot at Doug or at Curse or any of the, or even Golden Tate, but the ability to do what he did on that fourth down, the first fourth down, right? I mean, to just like the way he threw it up there for him.
Yeah.
That's just, I mean, that's just elite physical size and speed. And he just, it's just different. Even the other fourth down, I mean, just running a route like that and getting himself open and being able to shield against the defender. Doug had different skills. Golden Tate has different skills. I mean, those guys are great players in their own right. But just the physical freakiness of this guy allows him to do things that I don't think Russell's ever had the option to do before.
Russell. I mean, Russell. It's 50 years of Seahawk football.
Fair.
I mean, you just, you've never seen something like this, right? Joey Galloway was an immense talent. Joey Galloway ran 4.3. Joey Galloway could run by anybody in the league and was equally like just a specimen, but he was 5'10", 5'9", you know, and not a, you know, one that's going to just jump over everybody and run through everybody. I mean, you just have never seen, I think Joey physically, just from a gifting standpoint, was probably the only thing close on that spectrum. And, you know, what DK is doing in year two. And by the way, I think maybe as remarkable as anything, you talk about the health and durability of Russell, right? What was the biggest knock on him at Ole Miss? Constantly hurt, you know, neck injury and hamstring. And geez, you just can't carry that much, you know, soft tissue and lean muscle mass and not be hurt all the time. Look at Julio Jones. Look at a bunch of these guys. AJ Green, you're just hamstring, groin, you're just constantly hurt. Because, you know, that's the blessing and the curse of having that kind of body, right? And that kind of build is usually those are the guys like Ferraris that are constantly a cylinder or two off, and he's not been.
And I will say this, I mean, sort of jokes about emo Pete aside, this is something Pete has always wanted.
Yes.
I mean, we sort of laugh about the style that Pete wants. Obviously, it's a little exaggerated, but this is...
That's what he's had. That's what he had at USC
always
time
wanted
and again.
Like this, right? Whether Correct. It was Mike Williams when he first got here, or then, you know, they did tried it with Sidney Rice. I mean, like, this has been a goal. They just haven't always
tried
been
to actually
able to find
bring Terrell Owens in here.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. They tried it with T.O. I mean, like.
And by the way, had T.O. caught that touchdown pass, conspiracy theory said it's Matt Flynn's world.
Yeah. I don't know.
Matt Flynn would have won.
I don't know that I'm buying any of those conspiracy theories, but yeah, I this is something Pete's always wanted and has known is necessary, a big, tall wide receiver on one side of the field that you can just throw it up to like this. And I don't think, Mike Williams certainly didn't have the speed that DK has, but this is something he's always wanted.
Yes, and has always had. In his decade of dominance at USC, he had first rounder after first rounder after just, unique guy. And yeah, DK's is unique. So I think legitimately now, right, you kind of laughed at the 5 weeks in MVP intro and prelude to the game. You know, I don't know if what have we played now? 16, 18, 23, we're nearing 25 games. Is that enough to stamp DK for you and say, okay, generational talent, chance to be the best in the history of the Seahawks, and chance to be a perennial Pro Bowler, if not all pro receiver.
Do I have to say all of those things?
Yeah, Mike, that's what radio does.
I have to say generational talent after a year and a half.
Don't you remember, Mike, how we do this when we used to do it every day? Declarative, definitive statements, strong takes, hot takes, strong opinions.
I'm not ready to say that, but I'm willing to say he could absolutely be a perennial Pro Bowler, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's pretty realistic. Could he be the best in the history of the Seahawks? I think he's going to have some availability over the course of time. I mean, I'll admit I still get nervous about his injuries just because of, how tightly wound his body is. But, yeah, I mean, you got a little ways to go to catch Largent and Doug Baldwin. I mean, that just doesn't happen in a year and a half. Sorry.
That is still maybe the most constant question. Thankfully, the faucet's turned off a little bit with Titus. But, if there was a good 18-month stretch where no matter what game we watched, he would ask me, is that a Hall of Famer? Is he a Hall of Famer? Mm. Is he going to be? And I'd say, Ty, come on now. Like, you've asked me this a lot.
Come on.
Yeah, come on, bro. Like, what have I told you all the time? It's not about being great once or for a season or three seasons. To be in the Hall of Fame in baseball or football, you've got to do it for like a decade.
Yeah.
So I think that's fair. But I like what you said. I there's no question that he has shown enough in these 20-something games that he should be a perennial Pro Bowler in this league. In a league, by the way, that is getting infiltrated by pretty darn elite young wide receivers. And Daniel Jeremiah just saw his tweet this week saying, geesh, when I said the 2020 receiver class was the best that he had ever scouted in all of his years, it's certainly showing that fruit on the field this season. In the 21 class that's coming, is also loaded with just difference makers.
Are any of those guys better than Freddie Swain? I mean, maybe a few, but Freddie's been a lot better than anybody would have expected. Sorry,
what'd you say?
We'll get to him. We'll get to him later. Hey, speaking of the Hall of Fame, barbecuing at Famous Dave's. I want to talk through this because, look, weather's turn. I'm looking outside. So it's
raining. 15 rainy?
Yeah, it's not great.
Welcome
to
fall, man.
I know. This has been a great October. I don't want to complain. It honestly, it's been a really awesome October. Lots of golf in. It's been really beautiful. But if you're not like into grilling outside anymore, if that has a limit for you, let Famous Dave's just take care of that stuff, man. Fall's here. It doesn't mean the barbecue has to end, even though you don't necessarily want to be outside in the rain, because you can get St. Louis style spare ribs. You can get a whole country roasted chicken. You can get Texas beef brisket. You can get Georgia chopped pork. You get all those options available for catering and to go, like Famous Feasts, Pitmaster favorite combo, so you can combine some of those things. And you can order meat by the pound. They got burgers. They got wings. They got Sammy's. They got home-style desserts. This time of year, you need a home-style dessert. Howdy was going cobbler last week, right? That's what you wanted to do. It was cobbler or was
love,
a pie?
Love a cobbler, love a pie. Absolutely. Apple pie.
Did you understand the difference between a cobbler and a pie?
I think it's the shape, right?
Is that it? Mm-hmm. Other than that, does it taste the same?
I don't think you put it. A pie has a crust on the bottom and a cobbler just
there
on the
you
top.
Go.
Yeah,
thank
more
you,
of
Howdy.
A sometimes a crumble on the top.
Yeah, usually.
A cobbler crumble.
Usually a cobbler's in an 8x11 pan.
Yeah. I like a crumble.
Or like a cake sheet.
An 8.5x11, yeah. Like a piece of paper.
Yeah.
Interesting. All right. Well, so there you go. Home style desserts, adult beverages available to go. Perfect with any barbecue from Dave's Barbecue. Now, they're available for pickup and delivery in Northgate. That's where they've opened the Ghost Kitchen a while back. Ooh. So be prepared for the Ghost Kitchen in Northgate. Go to togo.famousdaves.com. Open 11 to 8. togo.famousdaves.com. Poor Pete, man. Just driving home in the rain listening to Radiohead.
He's not! They're 5-0!
No, but it's not.
He's not!
It's not his
it's really not!
5-0. No.
Enough!
No.
I've had enough! Poor, 5-0.
Poor sad.
Please.
Just listening to this. How does anybody listen to Radiohead? What? I hope your life is not in a place where this is good. Where this sounds like good music to you. I really, really don't care for Radiohead. But why the Pete thing? Well, because the question really, Brock, about this defense is whether or not it's sustainable.
Yes, it is. It's totally sustainable. They will be giving up 471 yards a game, dead last.
30
in the
points a game. But yeah, that's sustainable.
They will sustain this.
Well,
yes.
I guess
is it sustainable?
I guess
are able to sustain 470 yards.
Is their record with this defense sustainable?
And is it sustainable that they keep making the biggest plays in every game? Because say what you want about this defense and all of the yards and points they've given up, they have made enormous plays in every game. As big as Russell was in the final drive, there's no way he wins this game if it's not for the defense coming up with the three biggest plays of the game, other than maybe the fourth down, right? Two turnovers, the pick and the fumble recovery, and the fourth down stop. Those are the three biggest plays of the game. Russell doesn't get a chance without those plays. If they give up the fourth down, Russell never gets the ball back.
Correct.
They just kneel, and that's the end of the game, and we have to sit here and go, I can't believe Russell didn't get one more shot at this. Because
yep.
The defense stunk so much, but no, they made the three biggest plays in the game. So really, when I ask about sustainability, the question is, can you keep making enormous plays in every game and getting the turnovers like this without playing well on any other play in the game?
That seems kind of counterintuitive, right? That's kind of hard to imagine. The good news is Quentin Dunbar should get better as the season goes along. The good news is Jamal Adams, I think they know what he is and what he isn't, and they've won a couple games without him, and will have, you know, divisional foes where he's going to have to be at his very best. So can they count on two takeaways a game? No. When the 2013 defense, one of the most dominant defenses in the history of this league, created 39 takeaways, that felt sustainable. When you sack the quarterback 50 times, when you shut people down, when you get leads and they've got to throw into windows and zone defense and a four-man rush is getting home and affecting and impacting the quarterback. 39 takeaways felt reasonable. this crew creating the takeaways they have through five games does not feel as sustainable against better competition, Mike, because the other facets of your defense and those puzzle pieces that help complete that picture of dominance, they're not there. Now, KJ Wright dropped three interceptions the week before, right? I mean, as many takeaways as they've had and right near the top of this in the league of intercepting the ball, right? They could have even had more this season. So, you know, I think there will be some opportunities for some, but I can never count on takeaways. We saw this last year through the first four or five games. They took the ball away defensively, and then it went away. And against better competition, against the Rams, against the Cardinals in the NFC, against some of the better competition, I think it's going to be a bit challenging.
Yeah, I guess that's my fear also. I mean, now hopefully it's balanced by the fact that they get better. Right? I mean, like, there is hope that this defense will get better. We're going to see Snacks this week, right? I would assume in the next game he gets the, you know, the two-week bye,
yeah.
Right? So he gets himself into shape, and we get a chance to see Snacks, which I'm looking forward to. Jamal Adams should be back. Dunbar should be healthier.
I like to see that Big Snacks was already at the game.
Of course
he was. Already at CenturyLink. He was in the suite. He was ready, watching by himself.
Drinking water.
Rashad Penny was watching the NBA Finals game,
water,
meanwhile.
Right?
Had to delete a tweet. He wasn't watching the Seahawks, but that's okay.
Oh. He might have been watching both. You don't know how many.
Well, he deleted the tweet, which is a little guilty.
Because he thought maybe it didn't look good. But
wow, what a play by Rondo. What? Excuse me, Rashad. Your team is playing in primetime.
All right. That's enough. So you're gonna get some guys back, hopefully, on this defense, right? You're going to get Jordan Brooks back. I mean, like, there's some folks that should be returning. Is it enough, though, for them to get better? Yeah, they should get better. Just getting Jamal Adams out there should at least make them better.
And playing Washington and playing the Giants and
the Jets.
Philly,
that's not till the end of the year. First, you got to play Buffalo and the Rams and the Niners, the Cardinals. I mean, like, first you got to go play some pretty good teams, right?
Yes. I don't think at the end of the season they're going to be 32nd in yards. And yards, as we've always pointed to, can be garbage numbers and figures don't lie,
like,
and liars figure. And there could
points.
Be. What's that?
They're like 27th in points, though, right?
No, they're a little better now. They climbed up. They've transitioned. They're only giving up 27 points a game. So I think they're about 22nd in the league, 20th in the league at 27 points
There's
per game.
Bad defenses in this league. Yeah. Woo.
Yes, there are.
And
I mean, that is a component of it, too.
Yeah, and this remember? Year tends that way.
Yeah, and I've watched, you know, getting a chance to travel and watch a lot of these defenses that aren't tackling, a lot of these defenses that aren't shutting people down, a lot of these defenses that are struggling across the league. I mean, you know, we kind of joke about Pete and his transition into this new Pete. But remember 2 years ago when we talked to him, he said, and I asked him point blank, is it harder to play defense today than ever before in your entire coaching career? And it wasn't just because of his personnel. When you're not calling holding on the offense, right, when you're calling pass interference at a higher rate, when you can't hit the quarterback, when you've got no crowd noise, when you got no juice in the building, like all of these factors that benefit defense, it's not just the Seahawks that are struggling. There are a ton of defenses in this league, and I've watched them week in and week out. You know, we thought the old adage, oh my gosh, no offseason, right? And I think I may even said this on a podcast in August, like, oof, can be a little tougher on these old lines, a little tougher on these offenses, a little tougher to get it going in your rhythm and timing in defenses. Those guys that just react and cut it loose and see ball and hit ball should be an advantage. It's not been the case. Not been the case in high school, not been the case in college, and certainly not been the case in the NFL as offenses continue to score at a prolific rate.
Yeah, so what do you do now, though, if you're the Seahawks? You can't just count on, you know, the turnovers continuing at this rate. I know as much as Pete preaches about the ball, Pete knows that, you know, some of that, there's a randomness to it, right? And that's not necessarily sustainable if you're not doing all the things you normally do. You've got 2 weeks here. Your former defensive coordinator, Dan Quinn, was just let go after the Grim Reaper of Death, Brock Heward, came to town, as usual. Yep. So Dan Quinn has been let go. He's out there. Danny and Gallant asked Pete about that on Monday morning.
I haven't even talked to Danny yet, you know, and it all happened. I mean, we heard the news kind of leaking out. So I haven't talked to him yet. I don't know what he's thinking, you know. But my first thought is, you know, what's good for Dan, you know, to help him get through this, you know, and if there's something we can do to help him, you know, we'll talk about whatever. But it's a tough deal, you know. But, you know, and he'll be the first to tell you, they went 0-7 last year and then went 6-2 in the second half of the season and turned their season around. But they went 0-5, you know, and you know, that's hard to live with. And so, unfortunately, that's what it comes down to, you know. And he's a great football coach. He's a terrific person, and we love him and all that. And so we wish him the best. It's a hard time for him.
No, he's not going to come in and consult and coach. I think Dan Quinn's going to get away from the game of football. It was last night. They were on one of the broadcasts I was doing. They were talking to Jake Gruden, who got let go about the same time last year from the Redskins, or excuse me, the team in Washington. And he said, no, when I got let go, I did not watch a football game for 5 weeks. You know, I just cleared my mind, spent time with my family, slept in.
Still
and I don't think
paid,
for Ken Norton.
Know.
And I don't think for Ken Norton you want to bring Dan Quinn in right now. Ken Norton's got enough challenges to coordinate and call and personnel and everything else.
You don't think
else.
He would want the help?
What's that?
You don't think he'd want the help?
No. No, because I don't think Dan Quinn could. I think Dan Quinn would walk in and say, have you considered X, Y, and Z? And Pete and Ken would say, yes, and A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P, Q, R, S, T, U, V, W, X, Y.
I totally disagree with you on this. Okay. I would be Z. On the first phone I could reach would be calling Dan Quinn.
If you're Ken Norton?
No, if I'm Pete
hire
Carroll.
Your own replacement?
If I'm Pete Carroll, I've got to bring Dan Quinn in. It's all about competition, right?
Then you're going to have
either
to
competing
fire
or
Ken
you're
Norton
not.
Right away.
Well,
oh,
either you're competing or you're not. This defense not competing for the most part. They've got a bunch of turnovers, thankfully, and that's the only thing that's kept the teams in these games. If they haven't made these, what, six big plays over the course of five games, the Seahawks are 2-4, 2-3, right? And Russell's been amazing. Defense has made a couple of huge plays for him, thankfully, because they played like garbage the rest of the time.
What about on Sunday night when Chris Collinsworth was all, yeah, Ken Norton Jr.'s figured this game out. He knows exactly what the Vikings want to do. He has?
Right.
Excuse me?
Yeah.
Well, then why doesn't he implement that play? He's figured it out. They're going up and down the field on them time after time.
Like a knife.
Collinsworth's like, well, Ken Norton's got it all figured out.
And Brock, this really? Is Kirk Cousins. We're not talking about like the best of the best out here.
What happens when Aaron Rodgers gets back there?
I know. I
mean, that's a nightmare.
But what does Dan Quinn, honestly, Dan Quinn looks at it and says, hey, have you considered, yeah, what do you think? Yeah, we don't have the horses. We knew this in training camp. Right, we knew, and everybody did around this building, like, oof, man, we got to see some growth and development out of this defensive line room, and maybe Alton Robinson can be just a hidden gem, and maybe Daryl Taylor can come back, and maybe Bruce can
well,
stay healthy.
Maybe he brings Tack McKinley with him. I don't know. I mean, like...
That'd be nice. Keanu Neal.
Tack McKinley's groin popped out of his pants. Oh. He can't play. He got hurt
filthy. Week... Please don't say that again.
He got hurt week two. He tried to rest two
All
weeks,
right,
and
maybe
boom.
Maybe it's not him. Don't get caught up in the details, Brock. It doesn't matter about Tack McKinley's groin. Maybe it's Grady Jarrett. Is that better?
Now we're talking.
Okay, like whatever.
Ooh, I like that guy.
Just somebody who could help this team out. So I don't know.
Personnel wise, now those are two different conversations, and maybe over the weeks ahead,
do whatever you can to fix this. Do both. Call Dan Quinn. Call Tack McKinley and his groin. Yes. Called Grady Jarrett. Whoever
I don't
else
think
is out
Dan,
there.
But you think Dan Quinn. You think you would get Dan Quinn on a plane. You reach out to him and say, hey, buddy, I know it's brutal, but can you come out and
I
consult?
Would. You have a chance to add talent to your coaching room. You have all the money in the world to spend on coaches. Yes, absolutely. Whatever I could do to try to help fix this thing. And if I have to send a message to – I don't think confidence is the issue for Ken Norton. Like, he's got a problem right now. His defense isn't very good. And if yes. and if bringing Dan Quinn in helps with that, then I'm doing it, and I'm not even thinking twice about it.
No, who else's defense wasn't very good? Dan Quinn.
All right,
in
but
Atlanta.
When Dan Quinn Eesh. With Pete Carroll, they had a pretty darn good defense. He did a heck of a job coaching that thing. Now, granted, they've got some pretty good players at the time. Yeah. There's no doubt about it. But I would at least want another set of eyes to come in and help, and somebody who's got the kind of history that he does with them. Yeah, I think that's a must. I think you got to find a way to do it. So, you know, it's funny, you think of Dan Quinn, and it makes me think about, oddly, the 2015 Seahawks. I know it's not a team we necessarily talk about that often, but the 2015 Seahawks is probably, that's the year Pete should have won Coach of the Year. That's the best coaching job Pete ever did. He made the playoffs in 2015 after the debacle of the 2014 Super Bowl. It just doesn't happen. Watch the Rams last year and how they went down on a downward trajectory. Watch the Niners. Did you get a chance to watch the Niners?
I have not.
So I had DirecTV, so I'm watching I watched the entire game. I did not watch Red Zone. I didn't watch any that was the only decent game on in the Oh, sorry, Brock. I watched some
Come
of
on.
Game first.
No, Brock
that
was the angel
Rashad
of death
Penny.
Over there.
No, that's cool, Rashad.
It was the
no, that's cool.
afternoon
you were
game. It was
that's
the fine. Afternoon game. Yeah. I did watch a lot of Brock's game, as a matter of fact. The afternoon game, though, I watched the Niners. They looked horrible.
Awful.
Awful. That little stretch where Garoppolo kept their own picks at the end of the half was straight up embarrassing.
They have two wins this year against teams that are combined 0-10.
Yeah.
They beat the Giants and the Jets.
And they didn't look very good against the Giants, by the way. They honestly didn't. Like, I watched some of that game against the Giants. There was a time, like late first half, where if the Giants didn't make a bunch of mistakes in a row, which is what 0-5 teams do, I mean, it was like, it was a football game. So the Niners look terrible coming off a Super Bowl loss, and look where
the Panthers a few years back with the MVP of the league and Cam Newton.
Yeah, I mean, like, teams that lose Super Bowls tend to go in the tank in a hurry. The
Falcons, yep.
So just thinking about what Pete did in 2015. Oh, by the way, that was the Cam Chancellor holdout year also. To come back and make the playoffs that year, I think is an unbelievable accomplishment and probably the most underrated of Pete's career.
And if I remember right, wasn't that also one of the first times that kind of he acknowledged what his team was and wasn't, right? In their inability to run the ball and play that style of game and then just let Russell cut it loose in the second half where he set, you know, league records as far as efficiency goes in 8-9 games?
Maybe. I don't. Oh, yeah, at the end of the game. At the end of the season, yes. They
at the
went
end
crazy.
Of the 2015
yes.
season, yeah, because they kind of were at a crossroads and had a bye week and were really struggling. And yeah, then he handed the reins to Russell really for the first time, and they exploded in the second half. But, yes, to keep the glue together. And Russell, I think, is a big contributor in that as well. But you know, it starts with Pete and his ability. And that is his greatest asset. As much as we're poking fun and having fun with him and everything else and emo Pete and the challenge this must be to watch, you know, a defense when he's such a prideful defensive guy, there is just no question he is a glue guy. He does what his proteges have not done. He's done what Gus Bradley and Dan Quinn could not do, right? Through adversity and through tough times, really keep an entire locker room intact, entire, you know, belief system intact, and done just a remarkable job of it over a decade.
All right, let's do some Blue 88.
This is Brock and Salk's Blue 88.
Blue 88!
We take you to the field as Brock Huard breaks down three football questions as only he can.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
Brock, the Vikings seem to have a little something for the Seahawks. That defense slowed down this offense in a way that we haven't seen yet. Was the two high safeties or whatever they were running, is that a blueprint for slowing down this offense going forward?
Well, yeah, I think there were a couple things. I think those two safeties, and they've talked about this a ton in Minnesota this year, are, as far as a tandem goes, arguably the best in the league. I don't know if they are physically with their speed anymore, and I think Harrison Smith may be slowing down a tick, but mentally what those guys do to challenge Russ and all of the exotic looks and different looks and, yeah, some of that two-shell that's not just cover two, where they just line up and, oh, we're going to just play Tampa 2 or just straight cover 2, but we're going to mix and we're going to match and we're going to make it all look the same and pre-snap and post-snap and really challenge you after the snap. I think that's as much as anything that you saw with Russell in the first half in particular was like a, okay, you know, these things that we've been able to do for 4 weeks and get pretty clear pictures on everybody we've played, they muddy that picture and do as good a job of that as anybody in the league. Mike Zimmer is a coordinator, and then those two safety pieces really dictate a ton of it. They've also got linebackers that can run. You heard Chris Collinsworth talk a lot about Eric Wilson and some of the speed and his dynamic ability. Eric Kendricks can really run. So I think the combination, Mike, from the inside kind of back with those two backers and those two safeties, and the experience with which they play in that system, those safeties in particular, and that is not, as I look at the schedule and I look at the competition you're going to face, that is not something you're going to see a ton of. Having said all of that, you saw the adjustments in the second half. You saw them get the ball to the tight ends. You saw them get the ball out a little bit. You saw Russell run a little bit more, and then ultimately on the 96-yard drive, figure those pictures out very, very quickly.
All right, question number two. Rank your 2020 draft pick so far.
Ooh. Damian Lewis is my number one.
Has to be, right?
Yes. To come in and to start with no offseason and no OTAs. And I think as you've seen, you know, with Jamarco Jones and others that have played a little bit at left guard, it's not as if that cupboard is bare, right? They've had some other pieces come in there, and you're like, that's still kind of working, right? I mean, I think maybe one of the deepest positions on this team may be offensive guard, which Dave Wyman loves. But I think Damian's got to be number one gold star more than anybody else. To see him come in and fit right in and you know, grading-wise, maybe it's not been as high the last couple weeks as it was the first 2 weeks out, but you never feel like, oof, You don't feel like you do with the Vikings on the other side with Drew Samia, who's been one of the worst graded guards, multiple holding calls, multiple penalties, just killing
just picking on
that. That was brutal. That was mean.
Wow. That's a right guard.
Seriously.
You don't need to do that.
I was here for that, though.
Again?
Tell it to me straight.
When Collinsworth decides to go after someone, they're done. I mean, he just ruined that guy. That was sad.
Well, to be fair, there were 3 weeks prior, and I watched a couple of them that were just
still
real rough.
Still, man. That was rough the way he treated
for Drew. For Drew Samia's wife and family, yes. You think that was not fun in Oklahoma?
So Damian Lewis, number one.
Yeah.
Who's two?
Freddie Swain?
Yeah, it's got to be.
His seven catches on the season?
Yes, it's Freddie Swain, and then it's Alton Robinson, and then nobody else even gets a vote.
What about Jordan Brooks? He played some games. He started.
No. Jordan Brooks has not done anything.
He played two games.
Nobody else gets even a look in this conversation. And this is why at the beginning of the year, saying I'm not counting on any of the guys on this on the rookie class to do anything.
Alton Robinson made some tackles for losses.
Yeah, he gets a couple votes. Yeah, a couple votes for Alton Robinson. Done a couple things. He's shown up once or twice, and Swain's shown up a couple times, right? Has a touchdown.
Second in the team in tackles for losses.
All right. Yeah, with like two.
Three.
All right. Three.
Seven tackles, three for losses.
Yeah, I'm going to go Alton Robinson. In fact, I'm going to go Alton Robinson.
Ahead of Swain?
I think so.
Oh, my God.
Seven catches.
You
could have put anybody in Swain's spot on those plays with the impact of Lockett and DK, and he's running. You know, shallow crosses, and he's catching it. Yeah, it's not had a drop yet, but I think I'm going to go Alton Robinson.
All right, you're right. I'm just kidding. I'm just mostly giving Howdy grief. But it's interesting. I mean, you've got really good contribution from Damian Lewis and essentially nothing else so far from your rookie class in 2020. All right, question number three. When Snacks is finally ready, assuming it'll be for the next game after the week off here, how much impact can he even have on this defense?
Yeah, I think pretty minimal.
Really?
Yeah.
That's too bad.
Their rush defense for four games was just fine.
But Brock, was it just fine?
I don't think it was. I think their pass defense was so bad that nobody needed to rush.
And they were
their rush defense
games.
Was number three in the league through the first quarter of the season, correct?
Yeah, but they faced one runner. It was Ezekiel Elliott, and they were so enamored with Dak Prescott, they weren't even running the ball anymore.
Yeah, I got to agree with Howdy on this, Brock. They have no team's really made an effort to run the ball against them until the Vikings, even after losing the best running back or one of the best in the league, decided to just go crazy on them. So I don't know, man.
This is more of my concern of Snacks, that nobody in the league, you know, really went that direction. That, you know, while an excellent player in his prime. And I guess if you were to tell me that he could play 25 snaps a game and be in great shape and have no problems with a calf, Achilles, groin, hamstring, back, shoulder, whatever, if you tell me that
and
you say, hey,
those injury problems he's had in the past, or are those just things you're worried about?
Those are things I'm worried about when you've sat around and not started the car for 9 months. And there's a lot of sludge. There's a lot of stuff that's got to get out of the car and out of the system to be able to play. So you tell me that he stays healthy and he can play, you know, whatever, you know, the RPMs can get to for 20 snaps a game, then I'll say, yeah, he can have an impact. But would I bet on that for the next 10 games of his ability to stay healthy and play 20 snaps? I'd be very, very concerned.
20 snaps is like, what, 30% of the game?
Well, no, not a Seahawks game. It's like maybe a fifth.
Yeah.
They give up 100 plays a game or so. Sure. So 20 snaps is like, you know, one out of every 5
plays.
Kind of
player that you would say is more of a, like, he's going to take more than one guy, generally speaking, to stop him.
I would hope he can command a double team and not get just blown off the ball and blown backwards. But is he going to penetrate? Is he going to be a tackle for loss?
Does he allow Jaron Reed to do more of that?
And isn't that part of what the defense has been missing, is the idea that you don't have the good number situations when you're 4-on-5 like you've been talking about?
If you think, yes, I'm all for you guys' positivity and belief in Snacks, Harrison. I got to see it, because I have genuine reservation in a league that wants guys like that, in a league that really does covet those guys, that, you know, 31 other teams, you know, sat there. Maybe he told them he didn't want to play. And maybe he loves this environment. And maybe he sheds some of that sludge. And maybe he feels great. And maybe he does all of those things. I would love to be totally dead wrong on this. And we watch him in the Rams matchup and in the Arizona matchup and some of these teams that want to run the ball a little bit and play that numbers game. You're right. He commands to and takes to. I hope I'm wrong. But let's just say my expectation level is a little bit lower on snacks than everybody
else. I know I'm not supposed to tease in the podcast, but speaking of wrong, that gives me such a great opportunity to read one of my favorite stories of all time next. All right, I'll go around the NFL here in a minute, but since Russell beat Kirk Cousins again, I just had to bring out, Brock, one of the all-time great articles, which came out on April 28th, my birthday, 2012, right after Russell Wilson was selected, a round ahead of Kirk Cousins. Do you remember all of the Michigan State Spartans players just losing their mind?
How could I forget?
It's one of my all-time favorites. Drew Stevens tweets, "I just threw up in my mouth a little. I'm done," says Darquise Denard, and then tweeted, "I'm so peed off right now. Russell Wilson over Kirk is the worst pick I've ever seen. Hashtag truth."
But on what grounds? Russell had just beaten Cousins head-to-head in
Russell
the Big Ten
Wilson
title
over
game.
Kirk, I'm about to stop watching this. Simply bleep. Seattle's pick shows two things. You don't hire a head coach GM in the NFL, and there's a reason Pete Carroll didn't make it in the NFL the first time around. Mm. And as if Jim Harbaugh needed another reason to laugh at Pete Carroll. I mean, the amount of vitriol that came from the Michigan State Spartans players about those combination of picks is pretty crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, there were a lot. There were still people for the years after, right? That not necessarily just Kirk, but lots and lots and lots of that commentary. And yeah, you wonder now, right, if we could go back. Why don't we try to reach out to some of those guys next week? I know Darquez Denard is, I think, with the Falcons
he's
now.
He's in the league, right?
Oh, yeah. Yep, he's in the league. But maybe, yeah, we can try to reach out to a few of those and see if they've changed their
Somebody
opinion.
Told me that one of these guys is now an assistant tight ends coach for the Cardinals. So, you know, you could ask him, Brock, if you get a chance to do a Cardinals game this year. Ask him about Russ. All right, let's go around the NFL. Who's the biggest threat to the Seahawks in the NFC West? It's got to be the Rams, right?
Yes.
It's not close. I mean, I've gotten a chance to watch all these teams. The Rams look like they did a few years ago, or at least pretty darn close to it. The Niners look lost and injured and coming off the Super Bowl and everything else. And the Cardinals, while they have some upside, they're just kind of inconsistent, right?
Yeah, and the Rams are a pass interference call, which was a joke show, away from being 5-0. Now, granted, there was another call in that game, and it's never about one call, and they started super slow, but came all the way back from 3+ scores down in Buffalo to nearly pull that off and be 5-0. And yeah, they're pretty darn complete. I don't think they're as dominant on that defensive front seven as they have been. But they're also the team, I went and looked at Russell Wilson's career, they're the only team that he's under 500 against. Is the Rams and some of the challenge. Not the 49ers, kind of dominated a couple games above with Arizona. And those teams that just know you inside and out and just what they do in their operation, right? We talk about this podcast about the sustainability of this Seahawk defense, Mike. I mean, I fear for what the Rams are going to do to them personnel-wise. Like, I just don't know how you stop the outside run, how you stop the misdirection, how you stop, you know, them in coverage. Maybe Jamal Adams will play an enormous role in that, and let's sure hope he does around the box and line scrimmage. But yes, I think the Rams have been one of the most complete teams in all the NFC, offensively, defensively, special teams, in Sean McVay and Brandon Staley, their new D coordinator. I mean, as good as they get in the league.
Do you think the lack of crowds, lack of fans in the stands has helped the Rams more than any other team?
The Packers, number one. I'd say Packers, number one with Aaron Rodgers.
Jared Goff, so reliant on that headset communication. He can stand back there and listen to, I mean, he's got a voice in his head telling him, like, all right, here's the safety. They're in zone. Watch this corner. Here's
silence.
Where we're going. Yeah. In dead silence.
Yeah. Yes. Well, but good for them. I mean, they're figuring out a way to take advantage of what's happening. I mean, you can't fault them for that. You can make fun of them for it, but you can't fault them for it. I mean, that's part of taking
advantage. And they got the one guy in Jalen Ramsey that will he'll match with DK wherever he goes, and that will just be a prime time marquee matchup of, you know, and somebody physically that can challenge DK a little bit.
I hope Tyler Lockett has 150 yards that night.
Yep.
You do have other options. It's not just the DK show. Lockett's been a pretty darn good receiver, a Pro Bowl receiver in this league.
Yep.
I would hope that you're able to take advantage.
Rams leading the NFC, by the way, in points allowed, least points allowed the entire NFC.
It's pretty good.
And there's that. All right. Are we going to get 16 games in this season? Is everybody going to get 16 games in?
I would vote yes, but they're going to have to make some adjustments. And I think on Tuesday this week, they met as a league. And you know, it's kind of cool. The director on my crew, his dad is Howard Katz. and been around a long time. And Howard is in charge with Roger Goodell of making the schedule and has for years and years and decades. And so it's kind of neat to get some inside info on all the different moving pieces and how all of this is working and how they are scrambling at times. And, you know, they do have contingency plan after contingency plan. And we saw, you know, this last weekend as they had to move, what, six or seven different games around. I think they will play 16. I'd be pretty shocked if the Super Bowl is played on time.
That's what I've been thinking, is that they're going to have to end up having to bump that thing back. And by the way, I never mind only 1 week up into the Super Bowl. I think that's always just better. Like, you don't need the whole two-week thing, especially if all the media is not going to come to one central location. What the heck do you need a whole two-week lead-up to the Super Bowl?
And play it on Saturday while we're at it. We're moving the Super Bowl. We're moving it up a week.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
While we're jumping across this river,
please,
let's move it to Saturday.
Super Bowl Saturday is better for everybody. That is the best. You're absolutely right about that. Yeah, I tend to agree, Brock. I think they'll get them all in, but maybe not on time. All right, Chris Carson on with Bob, Dave, and Moore this week said that he is a pretty darn good running back.
Five, I know that for sure. You know, when I do the most I can with my opportunities I'm given, but I'm for sure top five, and that's not to sound cocky, just confidence in my ability.
By the way, Chris Carson's a really fun interview. I know he's not, like, incredibly verbose, but he always says something, like, one thing per interview that stands out. And saying that he's top five, I think, certainly is on that list. Is he top five in the league, and is he going to get paid here?
Is he better than Dalvin Cook?
No. But he's, well, no.
Better than Alvin Kamara?
Different. No, probably not. He's
Christian
probably not.
McCaffrey?
Huh?
Christian McCaffrey?
Probably not.
King Henry?
Derrick Henry?
No.
Ezekiel Elliott?
Maybe.
No.
Oh.
You would love for that to be true.
Thomas Rawls?
I mean, maybe.
Thomas Rawls?
Yes. He's better than Thomas Rawls.
Aaron Jones?
Yeah, he's better than Aaron Jones. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's probably right around five or six. He's in that range, right?
Yeah.
If he's not top five, he's top seven, right? I mean, like, he's probably...
Saquon Barkley probably better, too.
That's true. That's pretty good.
He's top ten. The challenge is its durability and taking care of the ball. He's shown you this year he's caught the ball better. I think he can catch it. When I look at hand situation, I think he's got better hands than some of these guys we mentioned. He's certainly not elite as a pass catcher like Kamara, McCaffrey, and Aaron Jones and some of those. And even Dalvin Cook, but it's all about his durability and taking care of the ball. If he is available and durable and he takes care of the ball this year and he fixes what has been a ball control issue, he should get paid. He should be a Seahawk. They should be able to find a way to, if the sides are reasonable, to get a deal done.
So, you know, just kind of watching that game on Sunday night and watching in general, like the whole running backs don't matter thing that I think really has been overdone, right? I mean, I've always believed, or for a long time believed, that running backs are overrated and the differences between them aren't that important. But there is a difference between having a good running back and not having a good running back.
Yes.
And you saw it with Minnesota. I mean, like, when Dalvin Cook went out, for the next couple series, they were a mess. Now, eventually, they did get it going again because the Seahawks' run defense was so awful. But there's a difference between having a great running back and not, right?
Yeah, I mean, you just see it, and it's really easy actually in person. I think it's easier in person now that I'm doing some of these games to see the guys that just have that extra little something. That just, whether it's through speed or power, they just don't get tackled the first time, and frankly, people don't want to tackle them. And Chris Carson has that. Dalvin Cook, when he just slices and runs with authority, right? And I've seen a bunch of these backs this year. They're just different versus David Johnson in Houston or... You know, even though Todd Gurley had a 100-yard game in Atlanta, you know, just those guys that get tackled, those guys that aren't a threat, those guys that the defense doesn't fear, but the truly elite ones at the very, very top are worth the bang for the buck, and it's why you saw Kamara and why you saw Dalvin Cook and why you saw McCaffrey and why you saw those guys get paid this offseason.
The range of those contracts, though, 16 mil for Christian McCaffrey all the way down to 12.5 mil for most of the rest of the guys. You're going to play Chris Carson $13 million?
No, I'm not.
And he's not coming back.
Nope, no chance. I'm not.
Like, I mean, 13, you got to be paying like 6 or 7, right?
Yeah.
And there's no chance. Kenyon Drake got $8 million last year. There's no way. There's no way.
Are you paying Chris Carson $8 million? Are you giving him that Kenyon Drake deal?
If he takes it, maybe. But you want to lock it up for 4 years for that?
Yeah, tell me whether or not you're going to still run the ball. Like, I think when the rest of this year shakes out and you understand kind of where the Seahawks go as the weather gets worse and into the playoffs, I think it'll be a little easier to make a decision on Carson. The nice thing is you don't have to decide right now.
Correct.
Wait and see if he makes it through this league this year healthy. Wait and see what happens. I think we'll have a much easier time answering that question near the end of this season. What's going on in the NFC South? Brady and Breeze, two, you know, all obvious Hall of Famers, two of the best to ever do it, but neither playing particularly well this year. Brady had his big mistake, right? And then Breeze, they ended up winning that game on Monday night, but he just, once again, not spectacular. Although,
they had to put in his backup, Taysom Hill.
Well, they didn't have to.
Well, but they did multiple times the biggest moments.
They just randomly...
And he converted the victory.
What?
He ran for a first down. Like, Taysom Hill was making all the big plays.
They randomly brought him in on third down where they had a chance to
win
the game.
He ran for a touchdown. He did his little part.
Ran for a game-winning touchdown?
It was a game-tying touchdown. Well, like, they've just
with the game
old.
On the line, they took the ball out of their
strike. We said Brady looked old.
But that seems stupid to me, not smart.
Well, then we're going to see Jameis Winston soon.
What's going on with these two guys?
Well, we said 2 years ago that Tom looked old and he kind of shut everybody up and he endured over the course of the season. Come on now. They just both look old. They look like an older golfer that's just lost, you know, the ball speed and he just doesn't hit it as far as the other guys and they can't move. And I think Drew popped his calf last night in like the fourth quarter. And God bless him for limping around and surviving it. And Tom Brady didn't know what down it was. He got hit so much. And I think he got hit in the head during that game because he took a ton of shots in that game. And you're almost to the point where, you know, and you've said this about the mobile quarterbacks, Mike, and I watched Matt Ryan, right, who just doesn't look the same 13 years in. And you've got to be able to create. You've got to be able to move.
You do in
this league today. You do. You do. And when the best do it, Lamar and Russ and Mahomes and those guys just extend plays and they make it look easy. And it is so tiresome and it is so hard when you have to play the game solely for the pocket, and when it's a dead play like Eli Manning the last 2-3 years watching him, you're just done. Your body's done. Your legs are done. Your athleticism and burst. If you can't have that, and it's where I fear a little bit for Alex Smith. You mentioned him earlier. I mean, he took 6 sacks. I mean, that explosiveness, that agility, that ability to just, you don't have to run a 4.6, but you've got to be agile and explosive. And at 40-something years of age, there's just none of that burst left in either of them.
Hey, you mentioned Lamar. What's going on with him?
I don't see a step forward. You know, in if Russell is at the mastery in the master's class, I don't see that. I don't see that evolution for Lamar in year 2 or 3. Highlighted mostly in that matchup with Mahomes, but just seeing unblocked blitzers and knowing your protections and changing plays and in a league where Aaron and Russ and Mahomes and even these old guys are able to manipulate everything in silence. Jared Goff at the line of scrimmage. They just don't do that. That's just not a part of what they do there. And I think he's got to evolve and, you know, got to learn that lesson. After being the MVP of the league a year ago where it came easy, this game will humble you and it will get harder and the league will adjust to you. And, you know, I think there's more at the line of scrimmage that he's capable of and he's got to do in time.
Hey, last thing here is I don't think we've taken enough advantage of the fact that you're calling these NFL games. You've been on the road. I mean, last week you had Carolina and Atlanta. Where are you going this week?
This week, good chance. The Grim Reaper's out again.
Oh,
we got the Fighting Maroons versus the Fighting Patricias.
Oh, jeez.
Yes.
Oh, you get to see Matt Stafford live and in person.
Again.
Lucky
yes.
you.
Yes. And Daryl Bevel. I'll get to see him on our Zoom call. I'll tell him hello for you guys, and you'll love his new haircut.
So that's some of the sludge, as you mentioned earlier, that you've seen. But, you know, who's impressed you, whether it's talking to them or being around them, players, coaches? I mean, who's jumped out to you?
Yeah, I think a couple things. And Cowherd said this a few weeks ago, talking about the Bills staff being the best coached staff in the league. And man, sitting with Sean McDermott, and I hadn't really met him before, and Brian Daboll, his offensive coordinator, and just that crew, Brandon Bean, the GM we talked to there. Holy smokes. There's a reason they're undefeated, and, you know, we'll get to see them play on a Tuesday night and see if they can continue that. But they have built that thing well in Buffalo and have some cool people to talk to. I would say the D coordinator for the Rams, a guy named Brandon Staley. Sean McVay moved away from Wade Phillips, kind of to our Ken Norton discussion. And whether it's Dan Quinn this season, or do you revisit that, or do you go younger and bring new people in? And Sean McVay's new D coordinator, who he had no background with, but was a Vic Fangio disciple, I mean, just talk about it. Genuine. That's probably been the biggest single takeaway, Salk, is that these coaches at the NFL level are incredibly transparent in those Zoom meetings. There's not a lot of hiding. They're not, you know, casting blame or dispersions amongst their players, but they're just much more open book, even in college. And then just a talented guys expressing what they believe in and what they're going to do and what their plan is. So that's probably been the most refreshing thing on the road this season.
How about players? Anybody that you've seen and just jumped off the page to jumped off?
Yeah.
The
Teddy
field?
Bridgewater. Really? We all knew he was a good dude, right? I think we've watched him for a lot of years. I think you've liked Teddy Bridgewater, maybe yep. not like overwhelming you as a player talent wise, but you're like, I like that dude.
Yeah.
And yeah, and his teammates and his coaches just love him. And I asked Matt Rhule this week, I said, why? Right? We hear that. Oh, guys love to play for him. Why? And he's like, you know, genuinely, he's not just a selfless guy. And you hear that said about, oh, he's selfless, but he genuinely wants the success of everybody else around him before it's just even sprayed on him. Mm-hmm. Like he genuinely wants to see everybody do well, and players feel that and they believe it and they love it. And he's an easy guy to root for.
Any chance they make the playoffs?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, like that yeah. Carolina team is all this, like, kind of look up and, you know, who knows where the year goes, but in an NFC South where no one seems to be really taking the lead, they got a shot at it, right?
They just won three games without Christian McCaffrey. And our old buddy Mike Davis has been awesome. I mean, like second in the league in broken tackles. Just been awesome for them. And they got a lot of speed on defense. They drafted well. And yeah, it's a cool Joe Brady, their coordinator out of LSU last year, does an awesome job with his scheme and system. So yeah, I think they're a 8-9 win team. They'll battle it out in that division, maybe more if they can get healthy. But yeah, they're another going to be, I think, tough out this year.
All right. Well, there you go. There's another Brock and Salk podcast in the books. A lot of great conversation with the team at 5-0. Maybe it doesn't look like the Seahawks, but they are the Seahawks, and they are 5-0. It's bizarre. Honestly, this has been as strange to watch as anything in a while.
It's remarkable. They are able to be remarked, right? Every
you
single
can remark
game.
Upon
every,
them,
it's
sure.
been as fun to watch, you mean. It's been as fun to
It's watch. Been amazing. Yeah, it's been really fun to watch. I'm not trying to...
You're trying to express some surprise, maybe a little doubt.
I didn't say doubt, but surprise. You're not surprised when you watch them play after a decade of watching them look nothing like anyone else in the league to at least see them look like a normal team? That doesn't seem weird, but and yet still have ways to have bizarre endings at the end of the game.
The hay is in the barn. Love you guys.
We got to run. We'll talk to you guys soon. Enjoy the 5-0 Seahawks. The hay is in the barn. See you, everybody.
Get to the chopper!
Howdy, fix Zunino!
A high fly ball to left field. It's pretty well hit. Frazier's back. It's going to go. Zunino with a two-run homer off the facing of the second deck. And the Rays lead 3-1.